Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
This rookie class is really unusual, really special. And the group of second-year guys does not suck either. How about that rookie class? How special is it? Ja Morant makes missed dunks look incredible. Never mind the dunks that he does make and finish. Even his misses are amazing. Check this out from last night's Grizzlies-Nets game.
Would have cut it to 10. Instead, oh, Morant! The crank! And a foul is called.
Ja Morant is one of those guys that even when he misses a dunk, he's like Vince Carter. He's one of those guys, when he misses a dunk, it can bring a house down.
That's a great point. I mean, how rare do you have to be a guy who can bring a house down on a missed dunk? Especially the crank. Oh, Morant, the crank! You gotta run that back again. You have to.
Would have cut it to 10. Instead, oh, Morant! The crank! And a foul
crank,
is called.
Crank!
Yeah, Kevin, why do you ring that bell every time somebody says crank, crank, crank,
crank, crank?
If he actually did finish that off, you'd never hear the end of it. I could devote an entire program to that dunk. The arena would have imploded. Twitter would have shattered once and for all. So I guess in a way it's good that he didn't make that dunk. It's probably a good thing that he missed it. And then there was New Orleans and Dallas later on, which meant the very first meeting of Zion and Luka, the rookie versus last year's rookie of the year. And the vet had a little something for the rook. Now that's not to say that Zion didn't have his moments, because he did. He always will. Even in a game where Dallas threw everything they had at him and made life difficult, he still had 21-6. And he still had moments like this no-look dish.
Zion sharing it nicely and gets the assist. Lonzo with the triple, and that ends a dry spell for the Pels.
And then check out the big dude. The big dude going straight at the Mavs and straight bully right here.
And back come the Pelicans on the run-up. They've got numbers. Williamson. Boy, he exploded over and through Kleba.
Zion just putting guys on the ground and then throwing down. It's like a Mack truck with no brakes coming downhill right at you. And my best advice is, you don't want to try and take that charge. Get the hell out of the way. Live to play another day. Except last night was the rare night when Zion was playing and he was not the biggest star on the court. He didn't have the most holy bleep moments. Some of that might be because he was playing his first back-to-back ever, and he's still getting his legs under him. But really, most of it was because Luka was running on the same floor. 30-17-10. This guy just broke the Mavs franchise record for career triple-doubles. And he did it in his second season. He did it a few days after his 21st birthday, and he did it with a busted-up thumb that required x-rays. And he got going early and often.
Your confidence has to soar.
The third highest scoring game of his career last night with 26 points as Porzingis climbs the ladder to catch the alley-oop.
Hi. Hey, Knicks fans. How you doing? How you living? How's your week going? You still feeling pretty good about that Kristaps trade? How's that working out for you? Are you still going to use all that space to get Kyrie and KD? Kristaps had 34 points, 12 boards, and 5 blocks. Yeah, but I'm sure that trade's going to work out really nicely for the Knicks. But enough about the Knicks being garbage. We covered that yesterday. Back to Luka. I could go through the entire game highlight by highlight, like that early three over Zion, or one ridiculous pass after another. But why don't we just skip straight ahead to overtime, because that's where Luka put on a clinic. You had the step back three.
To his left off Porzingis. Favors has him on the switch now. Down to 6 to shoot. Straight away, three-pointer. Good! With 109 remaining. 121.
That step back three. Then the perfect pocket pass to Porzingis.
It's to his left. Back to his right off Porzingis, who rolls. Gets the pass to the rim for the dunk. And the triple-double for Luka. His 14th triple-double of the season gives the Mavericks a 4-point lead.
Then the highlight to end all highlights from that night, putting Drew Holiday on skates.
Have here
Holiday still on him, moving his feet. 8 on the shot clock. Luka slammed on the brakes. Oh, deep in his bag. Kicks it out. Kleber for 3.
Are you kidding me about that? All right, a couple of things about that clip. Number one, Drew Holiday is an elite defender. He is an all-defensive team, first-team guy. And Luka got him not once but twice on that clip. Got him going backwards, pulled him forward, and blew right by him. I've never seen anybody make that guy look like that. He just put one of the NBA's best perimeter defenders in a blender, and then he hit pulverize. And then here's the other thing. The other thing about that clip is this. Maxi Kleber, what are you doing? If the game's in overtime and Luka has just humiliated a defender like that and set you up for a wide open three to end that game, you got to make that shot. You have to make that shot. Missing that shot is not an option. Luka does all of that, puts the ball in the perfect spot, and you miss it? Come on, man. You can't do that. You did a great job on Zion all game. Then you go and ruin all that hard work by puking all over yourself at the very end of the game. At least Luka was there to bail you out by tapping that rebound out to a teammate to retain possession. But you can't let that happen. It's like you had the Mona Lisa in your hands, and then you vomited all over it. Or as the legendary Tom Crabtree once tweeted, and I quote, "Imagine you making a painting. It isn't perfect by other standards, but it is your painting. You're proud. Then somebody takes a bleep on it. Except that painting was perfect. That highlight from Luka was that good, and then that shot was that bad. But I guess I will let that slide, since you did do monster work on the defensive end against Zion. It was his defense against the rookie that put that second-year star in position to dominate in overtime. In any other year, any year that Giannis is not doing what he's doing, Luka is an MVP candidate in his second season. In other words, there is so much talent among the young guys. Ja, Zion, Luka, Trey, the list goes on. Last night was a reminder that the next generation is not just on its way, they're already here. They're already here, and they're already damn good. The association is in very good hands once that baton is passed. Or better yet, once they rip it from LeBron's cold, dead hands. These guys are good. As far as the Knicks, like I said, I already covered yesterday that they're garbage. I hate to crush them 2 days in a row. I kind of even touched on it earlier in the program. But man, their dysfunction makes it so easy to rip them. So hard not to rip them. I mean, they can't get the hell out of their own way. A day after talking about James Dolan versus Spike Lee, I can't help but laugh at the franchise's former savior, Kristaps Porzingis, and the way he's playing of late with the Mavs. Like I said, this guy absolutely balled against the Pelicans last night. Again, 34, 12, and 5 blocks. And that's not a one-off either. This guy's been playing that well of late. So after some early season struggles in adjusting to his new team and his new situation with Luka and coming off that ACL injury, it looks like he is finally settling in. He was named the Western Conference Player of the Week. And since moving from the power forward spot to center, his game has clicked and his chemistry with Luka has taken off. This guy slid into playing a really efficient pick and roll, pick and pop game with a second year superstar, and it is fun to watch. Knicks fan, I know you don't want to hear it now, but it's kind of trending like he's back to being that unicorn that you all thought you had. You know, a 7'3" guy who can move, block shots, knock it down from long distance. Did I mention he is still only 24? Yeah, but at least you have that cap space to pursue KD and Kyrie, right? Knicks fan, this is going to end so badly. You know this. And my man is not about to let you forget it either. He was asked after last night's game if it felt like it had a playoff-type atmosphere. Listen to what he had for you, Knicks fan.
Playoff-type atmosphere out there.
I mean, I wish I had that experience. To tell you.
Have some, Knicks fan. Have some, Jim Dolan. Zinga! Not only have some, but have some for the next decade. Because that's the start of Dallas's success right there. Because you knew it was just a matter of time before these two dudes figured it out, and it looks like they have. Great news for the Mavs, horrible news for New York. But then again, Knicks fan, at least you have that amazing chemistry between your owner and your most loyal and popular fan. Nobody could ever take that from you. The future and the present are bright in Big D. And in New York, it's never looked so horrible. I don't know. Maybe Spike and you other fans can try to get your money back.
Your singing voice leaves a lot to desire. You're a bad singer.
Don't quit your day job.
You're
right?
A bad singer.
This is terrible.
This is terrible.
I want my money back.
They all want their money back. Greg Gard is my guest. Greg, good to have you back. How are you?
Hey, doing great, Jim. How about you?
Good, good. So you've won seven straight. You're in the top 25. You're in a three-way tie for first in the conference. So let me rephrase the question. How is life for you right now?
Well, it's good. I mean, it's obviously our guys have done a tremendous job here the last seven games, and even before we started to turn the corner a little bit, but this group has grown and matured and come through more adversity probably than any team I've ever been around in 30 years of coaching, and just really proud of how they've bonded together and the success has shown itself on the floor.
You know, for those who don't know, I was going to get into all that, Greg, but for those who do not know, back in late November and early December, the team did go through a rough stretch where you lost 3 of 4. You were sitting at 5-5. Where was the team at that point?
Well, I think we were trying to find our way. You know, we had lost an All-American from last year in Ethan Happ, and there was some identity crisis taking place in terms of who we are and what how we needed to be to be at our best. And this group also had come through, you know, all the way back to last May, Memorial Day weekend. We had an assistant coach, Howard Moore, and his family get in a horrific car accident that caused the loss of the life of his wife, Jen, and his daughter, Jaden. And, you know, this group had to face that late spring through the summer. Coach Moore then had another setback with a heart attack in June and has been on administrative leave for trying to rehab and trying to get back to health. So they've had to deal with a lot of personal, real life challenges and, you know, fighting their way through the route to become a good team was really minuscule compared to what they saw happen to the Moore family in late May and early June. So I think this group, like I said, just has matured and bonded and had some events happen to them that have caused them to grow up in a hurry.
Wisconsin head coach Greg Gard joining us. It was the most horrific thing. It was just such an absolute tragedy. So Howard Moore has taken a leave of absence from the team as he recovers. You've talked about how for a long time his office was closed and you couldn't even bear to go into it. So as a head coach and a team, how do you go about supporting Howard and each other when you're dealing with such a horrible tragedy?
Well, I think the biggest thing, Jim, is just be present. You run out of the words to say, and as I visited with Howard, whether it was at the University of Michigan Hospital when he was there after the accident or when he came back home, you get a point in time where there's not much more you can say, and nothing you can say is going to change the outcome or the reality of what has just happened. So I think just having your presence and being there for your players, knowing that for most of these guys, it's the first time they've experienced something this tragic. The death of two people that they really knew and loved and the death of a child and Jaden, who was 9 at the time. That's something that, like I said, there's no manual for that. It's not covered in coaching 101. It's just one of those things you got to walk through day by day and try to do your best possible job to support and help those that are coming through it. And everybody goes through it. I've realized with our players, they all process this in different ways. Some are very emotional, some are very quiet, and I think the biggest thing is just to try to support them in their own personal journey through this.
Right. Greg Gard is my guest. You know, there's one more element to this. It was senior night, and one of the people who was recognized was Rashard Griffith, who went to the NBA after the 1995 season, and then 22 years later, he comes back to complete his degree. He's on track to graduate in the spring. So let me just start right there. What kind of an example does that send to the current players when they see him finishing what he started so long ago?
That's an amazing accomplishment for Rashard to come back, and part of that is due to his promise to his mom a long time ago when he left to go to the NBA that he would come back and fulfill his degree. And the other credit also goes to Howard and Jen Moore, who Howard was his host when he came on his visit and was a teammate of him, albeit Howard was a couple years older than Rashard, or is a couple years older than Rashard. But Howard and Jen stayed on Rashard about coming back and making sure you fulfill that commitment you made and get your degree. And they when he came back to Madison after he wrapped up his playing career, they took him into their house and took him under their wing, so to speak, and really got him on his feet to pursue and finish out this degree. So huge credit to the Moore family, obviously, for continuing to push Rashard, but Rashard did the work, and Rashard's the one that deserves the credit for such an amazing story and such a great example for our younger guys and anybody out there that's still trying to better themselves and pursue the education that maybe they wanted to have or haven't quite accomplished yet. It was a great night for Rashard.
We're talking to Greg Gard. And then on top of that, Greg, Rashard has been involved in helping to care for Moore and his son. Last night it was Moore's parents who took part in the ceremony with Griffith. How do you explain what it's been like to go through all of this with Howard and Rashard and everybody else involved, all part of that Badger family?
Yeah, it's been emotional, and I know how it was or it's been for Rashard because Rashard views Howard as an older brother. He calls Howard's mom and dad, literally, and I think they've been good for each other. You know, Rashard's been a great role model for Jarrell, his Howard's son, who's 13 right now in eighth grade and was there last night as well. And obviously he's been there to support Trennis and Howard Sr. as they try to walk through and recover from such a horrific tragedy.
Yeah, I appreciate all your thoughts on that. And now the national audience may not have known that, and they do. And then you've got your team. Greg, for instance, you got off to kind of a tough start. The team is trying to find its identity. There have been so many challenges over the course of the season, in addition to playing in a really tough conference. So what's it say about this team that these guys did not fall apart in the face of all these challenges, and instead they just kept on working and battling and grinding?
Yeah, I think that's the key. You said key words there right there. Keep working, keep battling, persevere. They understood really quickly, or they figured it out over time, that they're better together than they are individually. So we've got to bond together in the locker room. We've got to do this for each other. Let's play for the name on the front of the jersey. And they've done a great job. We've had great leadership, even though we only have one senior that's in the rotation of Brevin Fritzel. Our other upperclassmen, Brad Davison, Demetric Trice, Micah Potter, have all done a really good job of leading vocally, but also by example. And it's a great life lesson for them. And obviously what we've touched on, what they've walked through personally and what we've been through as a team over the last 8-9 months. But it's a great testament to, hey, you stay together during tough times, surround the people that are the most important to you, and keep staying true to who you are. Do what you believe in. Keep working to get better. And they had a choice. They could either choose to split apart, and the wheels would have fallen off, or they made the choice to come together and bond and become a really good team. And like I said earlier, I'm really proud of what they've accomplished so far.
You know, when you say that, I'm really curious what your thoughts are on this. Greg Gard, my guest, for another moment or so. When you talk about grit and resilience, these are a couple of concepts that people always talk about, and in fact, in a lot of different walks of life. In your experience, can you teach or coach grit and resilience, or is that something that the players have to have when they show up on campus?
I think you can direct them in a way. You can point out some examples. You can talk about it. You know, we do different leadership books all the time, and I try to put as much information in front of them as they will tolerate. But I think there's no better teacher than experience. And I think that experience that we've gone through, like I said, has fortified us, has kind of calcified us. And, they've developed a grit that maybe they didn't have back in, we've won some games in places and beaten some teams that back in November and December, we would have not accomplished that feat. For example, last week winning at Michigan. So they've grown to it, and that's a credit to them for not, like I said, backing off the challenge, not flinching, and continue to find ways and bond together. And like I said, I think it's a great lesson that they'll carry with them for the rest of their lives.
And then finally, that was your 100th career win at Wisconsin. I know you're not looking to make it about you, but that's a really nice number. As somebody from Cobb, Wisconsin, what's it mean to get 100 wins as the head coach at Wisconsin?
Well, it's obviously I take a lot of pride in it, but I take pride in all the people that have made it possible. And it's people that have helped me before I ever got to this position, the coaches and mentors that I've had, the coaches I've worked with over the years as an assistant, and obviously – probably most importantly, my current staff and the staff I've had here in the last 4.5 years and our players. I mean, I haven't made any baskets, Jim, and I don't play any defense. So
right.
It's our players that do it all. And they put up with me when I'm not in a great mood. I get a little grumpy once in a while when things don't go well. So the credit goes to them because obviously it's our team's 100th win last night. It's not, doesn't belong to me collectively, individually. It's part of a group of a lot of people that have had their hands on this success.
And they're getting it done. That's seven straight. They're in the top 25 right now. Wisconsin 20-10, 13-6 next up. They're at Indiana on Saturday. Their head coach is Greg Gard. Greg, great to have you back. Thanks so much for that, and I appreciate it.
Hey, and thanks for having me on, Jim. Hope all's well.
Hi, everyone. If you've got a minute, I'd like to bring you up to date on my health situation. The one-year survival rate for stage 4 pancreatic cancer patients is 18%. I'm very happy to report I have just reached that marker. Now, I'd be lying if I said the journey had been an easy one. There were some good days, but a lot of not-so-good days. I joked with friends that the cancer won't kill me, the chemo treatments will. There were moments of great pain, days when certain bodily functions no longer functioned, and sudden massive attacks of great depression that made me wonder if it really was worth fighting on. But I brushed that aside quickly because that would have been a massive betrayal, a betrayal of my wife and soulmate Jean, who has given her all to help me survive. It would have been a betrayal of other cancer patients who have looked to me as an inspiration and a cheerleader of sorts of the value of living and hope. And it would certainly have been a betrayal of my faith in God and the millions of prayers that have been said on my behalf. You know, my oncologist tried to cheer me up the other day. He said, Alex, even though the two-year survival rate is only 7%, he was certain that one year from now, the two of us would be sitting in his office celebrating my second anniversary of survival. And you know something? If we, because so many of us are involved in this same situation, if we take it just one day at a time with a positive attitude, anything is possible. I'll keep you posted.
That is very, very good news. That's awesome. That's awesome because that means that there is also, not only is he tremendous inspiration, but there's potential for more moments like this. The category is current sports nicknames. I'll take current sports nicknames for 1,000. Alex, roll it.
Joel Embiid in 2019 won the trademark for this nickname of his that also describes the 76ers' strategy of improving the team.
Paul, what is do a 180?
No. Margaret or Mike? What is the process?
Now, of course, the very easy thing here is to jump in and clown Paul for jumping in immediately with a utterly clueless response. But that's like shooting fish in a barrel. It's so lazy. Because every night, somebody jumps in with an absolutely terrible response in the form of a question. And every few weeks, that answer is in a category related to sports. So I could do this all the time. It really is the easiest, laziest segment in sports talk radio. I could play the latest clip and then run out a montage of all the other horrible answers that have come down through the ages. Alvin has an entire section on his board dedicated to horrible answers. I mean, hell, Alvin, go ahead. Give me a taste.
What is X?
No.
Who is Parker?
No. Is Carmelo Anthony?
No.
What is Auburn?
No.
Who is Magic Johnson?
Oh, no.
Oh, no. And there's so much more. There is so much more where that came from. Those sports categories exist on Jeopardy for two reasons. One, to humiliate the contestants who know nothing about sports, and to get the show trending on Twitter. So I'm actually trying to swear off Jeopardy being a topic on this show. But the thing is, that answer from Paul was so weird and so terrible, you can't ignore it. Like, I'm not expecting every contestant to show up on Jeopardy and know every current sports nickname. And in fairness, it's not like Joel Embiid is a household name. You know, not for people who don't follow it. Not like Carmelo Melo Anthony is. Or, I'm talking nicknames now. Or, yeah, Melo, you have LeBron King James, like that is. Or even the Caruso. The Caruso. Like, that's a household nickname. And I'll give you this. The Process is one hell of an unusual nickname. So, it's an unusual nickname for a guy who is not a household name. Right. That's why it's in the $1,000 clue. You know, I don't know how this guy's talking out his ass like that. It'd be one thing if you had nothing to risk. It's $1,000 there. $1,000, you have no idea where you're going, and you buzz in with this?
Joel Embiid in 2019 won the trademark for this nickname of his that also describes the 76ers' strategy of improving the team.
Paul, what is do a 180?
Nope. Margaret or Mike? What is the process?
Hey, Margaret. Hey, Mike. Either of you want to embarrass yourselves the way Paul just did? Of course not. Because his wrong answer is a win for you. Really a win for all of us. What is Dua 180? Again, I'm not here to clown Paul for missing on an unusual nickname for a guy who's not known throughout the country. But damn, Paul, use your freaking head. What person in the history of mankind has ever been nicknamed Dua 180?
What is Dua 180?
Nope.
Look, I know the strategy is to buzz in as quickly as possible, whether you know the answer or not, and then hope that it comes to you when your name is called. But again, I've got to ask, have you ever in your entire life heard of somebody been referred to as Dua 180?
What is Dua 180?
Nope.
If you went with something like Joe, I can understand that. It's a nickname for Joel. It doesn't fulfill the requirement of being a strategy for the team, but at least it's a nickname. Dua 180 is sort of a strategy for a team, but it's not a nickname. Have you ever sat down with the fellas? Have you ever sat down with the fellas? You know, A-Rod, the A-Train, and Dua 180?
What is Dua 180?
Nope.
You know, hey, man, here's my crew. The Great One, MJ, Larry Legend, and Dua 180.
What is Dua 180?
Hey, meet my boys. The Minister of Defense, the Nigerian Nightmare, the Muscle Hamster, the Human Highlight Reel, and Dua 180.
What is Dua 180?
No, of course, Joel Embiid's nickname is The Process, as in trust the process.
Trust the process?
And if that's all there was, just another dope, giving another dopey answer on Jeopardy, then I wouldn't be talking about this. It would not have made the show. But because it involves Joel Embiid, there is another level. There always is with Joe. And if you go to his Twitter feed right now, go to his Twitter account, his name shows up as Joel Do a 180 Embiid with three question marks after it. That's right. Somehow Paul's answer made it all the way back to Joe, and because he is the most online person in the history of sports and the greatest online presence in the history of sports, he immediately changed his name. It's vintage Joel Embiid. It's classic. Paul throws a horrible shot off the rim, and yet Joe is there to clean it up and throw it down. The big fella bailing the little guy out. And because of Embiid, I just did a 180 myself on Paul's answer. Thought that was the dumbest thing ever. Except because Joel was there to clean up the mess, he turned that awful answer into a great answer. In other words, trust the process.
Trust the process?
Do a 180.
What is do a 180?
Nope.
Welcome, my friend, to the lazy Jeopardy fail mix, Paul.
100 plus assists in an NHL season has been accomplished only 13 times, 11 times by this player. Joe,
who's Magic Johnson?
Oh, no. Talking about hockey, not the NBA.
In 2010, Cam Newton became this university's third Heisman Trophy winner.
What is Ohio State?
No, what is Auburn? You're obviously not a big football fan.
Though he didn't play organized hoops until the ninth grade, this Spurs center is a three-time NBA Finals MVP. Leah.
Who is Parker?
No. Hans.
Is Carmelo Anthony?
No. Team.
354 wins did not overcome the controversy as this ex-Red Sox pitcher didn't make the Hall of Fame cut in 2013. Gudrun?
Who is Pete Rose?
No. Stacy.
Who is Curt Schilling?
No. Sarah.
Who is Mark McGuire?
No. Obviously, you're hoping that baseball does not come up as a topic.
Colleges by team names for 200.
Crimson Tide. Terry.
What is Auburn?
No, Terry's going to hear from University of Alabama people on that one.
Jesse Owens, known as the Buckeye Bullet, broke an astounding 3-world record for this Big Ten school. Chris, what is the University of Ohio? No.
Joel Embiid in 2019 won the trademark for this nickname of his that also describes the 76ers' strategy of improving the team. Paul.
What is do a 180?
No.
Paul. I'll tell you what, though, as offensive as that is, that's still not as offensive to me as Goodwin. Come on, Goodwin. He is Chris Haynes. Chris, what's going on? How are you?
Jim, so you're trying to tell me if I got hit with a 2x4 and I was waiting on it, that's not disconcerting as well?
Good point. Very, very good point. Very good point. But you're talking to a guy who just did get hit by a 2x4, so I don't want to get into any kind of argument about it. But it's a good point. All right, so Chris, let me first, before we talk about the season, I got to ask, you are doing great work as a TNT sideline reporter. What was your reaction when the opportunity came up, and how much fun are you having doing that new gig?
No, thanks for saying that, Jim. That means a lot coming from you, man. You know, it was ecstatic, and I'll say the reason I was ecstatic was when, you know, when the job was offered to me, I had a little... I would say there was some pause because I didn't want to compromise what I do. You know, I'm a reporter, and you know, I was told that I would be able to, you know, still be me. You know, bring reports to the broadcast, the insight, the conversations that I have with players behind the scenes, bring those to the forefront. And TNT and Turner, they just allowed me to just be me. And when I was told that I would be able to do it in that fashion, man, it was just like, you know, it was great. It reminds me of, you know, David Aldridge and Peter Vesey when they were holding down the fort in that role. And, you know, I'm excited, man. I'm learning every day, still learning. But I hope when people watch the broadcast when I'm doing the game, I hope they get something from it.
Talking to Chris Haynes, not only that, but they threw you in the deep end, my man. It's one thing to have that gig. It's another to do that first in-game interview with Greg Popovich. Now, the two of you seem like you're having a pretty good time. What was that like for you?
You know what, Jim? It's funny you mentioned that because Pop told me before the game, he was like, I'm a mess with you. You know, I'm a mess. But I didn't know what that meant. You know, so I'm like, oh, shoot. So if you look at that clip, I'm kind of like smiling midway through my question, getting it out to him, because I didn't know what he was going to do. I didn't know if he was going to go off on me. I didn't know what. I didn't know if he wasn't going to answer my question. So I was getting kind of nervous about what he was going to do. But, Jim, I'll say this, is that I would take Pop any day being my first coach that I interviewed. The original plan was for me, my first game was supposed to be the Laker-Clipper game the week before, which would have been 2 days after Kobe had passed. Mm. That was supposed to be my first assignment. And so, you know, I was already, you know, a little pumped, a little nervous about, you know, just having the Lakers Clippers being my first time, you know, doing sideline. I've never done sidelines before. And so I'm stepping into a marquee game, Lakers Clippers. And then, you know, Kobe passed that Sunday, 2 days before. And the plan was still to have me on that game. And I'm putting a lot of pressure on myself, Jim. I'm like, damn, like, golly, like, how do you do a game like that?
That's tough.
Like, how, you know what I mean? There's no preparation for that. There's not a precedent for that. And, you know, they ended up postponing the game. We found out the day before. But, you know, I'll take Pop any day because that Clippers-Lakers game 2 days after Kobe passed, and that was supposed to be my first assignment.
No doubt. Chris Haynes joining us. All right, so during the week, the Celtics and Nets had a game, and you gave an update on Kevin Durant's recovery. Chris, based on your reporting, where is he in terms of the recovery process?
Man, people say he's looking good. He's playing 3-on-3. He's progressed to that, and I think KD came out and confirmed that yesterday. He did a local broadcast and confirmed that playing 3-on-3. They're banging him. You know, he's receiving physical contact. He's looking good, and I think, you know, some video surfaced of him a couple weeks ago just shooting stationary shots, pull-ups, jumpers by himself, and you know, the Nets are ecstatic with where he's at right now. And so the plan is still to let him just to continue on his rehab at a slow, gradual pace because there's no rush. He's coming back next season. But, you know, he's ultra, it was described to me, and he's ultra motivated for this comeback. He really can't wait to get out there and play with his team, new teammates. And so, no, he's in a good space right now, confidence-wise, physically. He's probably at the best he's been in a while.
Chris Haynes joining us. All right, so quick follow-up. There's been talk that he might play for USA Basketball at the Olympics this summer. What do you make of that? Do you think that's a good idea? Do you think he should?
It's still open. It's still open for sure. It's a possibility. I will say this. I think you're asking me, Jim, is it a good idea? I think so, because I think if he plays in the Olympics, obviously he's not going to be asked to really carry any real bulk of a load there. So that experience will give him time to just get reacclimated to playing, you know, physical 5-on-5 competitive basketball without a real workload. That way he can kind of brace himself and know what his limitations are, or know what he can do, know what he can't do. That way, once the season comes along, everything just won't be new then. He won't be fighting out new things at that point. So I think it'd be a good easing transition for him to play in the Olympics, because he's going to be playing with other great athletes that's going to be asked to do more. And we still don't know, what's in store for the Olympics, with the coronavirus going on. But, I think if he feels like he can go, it's not putting him in real jeopardy. I think it'd be a good transition for him to go play in the Olympics before the season starts.
Chris Haynes joining us for a few more moments. Now, you were in Los Angeles for the Pelicans-Lakers game. We saw Zion there. We saw Zion against Luka last night. You've got a piece up right now on Yahoo about a gift that Zion gave his teammates back in February. What was that gift, and then what's it say about him and the chemistry that the team is starting to develop?
Well, if you know anything about Zion, man, like, he really doesn't like talking about himself. He really doesn't like doing one-on-one interviews. One time I was told, someone requested a one-on-one, and he asked if he can have one of his teammates with him. You know, he really doesn't like talking about himself. He doesn't. And so you really don't – so fans really haven't gotten a sense of what type of player he is, what type of person he is. But I was told, somebody, one of his teammates, leaked it to me, was that not too long ago, out of the blue, he came to a practice session early. He beat everybody else there, and he had these, what were they? They were these customized Beats headphones, and they were customized to fit the Mardi Gras theme colors. And every one of the Beat headphones covers had their names engraved on them with their team numbers. And so, he just, gave up this all to all of his teammates. And I was able to get him one-on-one just for that. He didn't want to talk about that. He didn't want to, bring this to light. And he told me, man, I just want to show these, dudes how much I care about them and try to build some team camaraderie. And, this is what I came up with. And he said he's glad he sees everybody wearing them, and everybody's still wearing them right now. So he said that makes him feel good, that it was well worth it.
I think it's awesome. Well worth it. You know why, Chris? Because this. These guys, they can afford anything they want. They can not only afford, but they're given all these things. To get something different and unique, something cool like that, that goes a long, long way. Guys love that. Before you go, you mentioned Kobe. Now, Damian Lillard told you a story about a moment that he had with Kobe at the All-Star game back in 2014. I want you to share that. What happened?
Yeah, that's the one true memory of Damian Lillard that's going to stick with him, is that he made his first All-Star game, and he wasn't playing. He was excited, and that was the year, Jim. I'll try to, make it brief, but that was the year Dame participate in the skills challenge, the rookie sophomore game, the three-point contest, the dunk contest. He made history competing in all the events in the All-Stars. So he was just pumped and motivated. But he wasn't getting any action in the All-Star game. And Kobe sat next to him, on the bench, and said, "Hey, bro, you belong here. Don't let your confidence waver from this experience. You belong here. You're better than most of these guys on the court. You should be playing. Use this as motivation." He said, "Use this," and that stuck with him the whole throughout. He said, during the parts of that game, Kobe would look over to him. Dame had his head down or whatever, and Kobe would go sit over there and just start talking to him, keep giving him pep talk all throughout the game. So he said that's something that Kobe didn't have to do. And from that moment on, after the game, Kobe gave him his number. Told him to reach out whenever he did, and Dame said whenever he talked to him, he said within 24 hours, Kobe responded back. They had a relationship ever since then.
Senior NBA insider for Yahoo Sports, TNT sideline reporter, host of the Post It Up with Chris Haynes podcast. He is the pride of Fresno, good friend of the program, and you're right, man. Even if you know that somebody's going to smash you in the face with a 2x4, it probably hurts just as much. Touche. Chris, great having you back, man. I appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Jim. Take care, man.
You too. Chris Haynes. He's got a good point. He's got a very good point. All right, so we're about two segments into me walking into a lead pipe blast. You know what would have been great after I did that? And this is great video of me reaching for my head. If I had gone, why? You know, like Galuli just smashed me in the head with a lead pipe, because that's what it felt like.
Why,
Hawk, did you want to host the show? All right, halfway through it, still to come. A gambling degenerate who lost some bets, allegedly, went online and started to threaten the people who he blamed for losing those bets. You know, a really scummy thing to do, a terrible thing to do, but when does scummy become criminal? You might know of a famous moment where Adam Hawk came in the studio and smashed into one of our cameras. And you might know it because it happened live, so we have video of it and we put it up on social and the entire screen is shaking. And that's pretty funny. It's really funny when it happens to somebody else. It's not as funny when it happens to you. How do I know? Coming out of that last break, I smashed into the exact same camera. Now you might ask yourself, how could that happen? How could you be that dumb? Well, one, because I'm that dumb. So is Hawk and so is I. But if you imagine a studio, if I'm doing this on radio, just imagine the studio. If you're watching on CBS Sports Network, you probably understand how this might go. We're broadcasting from a studio where we are simulcast and we have cameras that move around on tracks. There are these cameras that drop out of the ceiling, and they're like big, how would I explain this? They're rods, and they drop down. I walked back into the studio looking at my phone, did not see the camera, and smashed right into it with my head. And these cameras have no give whatsoever, none. So I'm like, damn, that hurt. So I think they're like, and then the look on the faces of the XR4 Ti is just perfect. They're like, holy crap. The old man just ran into one of the cameras. And Hawk's all, dude, are you all right? I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. I think I'm all right. Do I not look all right? He's like, yeah, you hit that thing pretty hard. I'm like, yeah, right. Like you did. Damn, Hawk. Now I know what you went through. Adam, put those headphones on real quick for a minute. So I'm like, I'm going to look like Haseem Rahman soon with a head growing out of my head. I know you've never heard of him. Go to Google and look that up. He was in a fight and he had a head growing out of the side of his head. Dude, now I know what you went through, man. That did not feel too good.
I feel worse for you than the other guys do because I know exactly what that's like. It is like hitting a boulder, zero give whatsoever. It's the hardest thing I've ever felt in my life. And it was funny when it happened to me because it happened on the air and it shook the whole room like an earthquake. But I'm not going to lie. I was dizzy for a while.
Yeah.
And your eyes are kind of shaking inside of your skull. And I was like, wow, this is so much worse than I thought it was. It's extremely painful. So I know what you're feeling right now. I can't believe you're still able to do a talk show.
Yeah, it's funny until it's not. It's not, when the NFL players, and I'm not saying that at all, but when these guys talk about getting in a car wreck over and over and over again, I felt like I got into a bit of a wreck. Like, how do you know if you're concussed?
I don't know, and I don't want to play a doctor on the radio, but I wouldn't be taking any naps after work if I were you. I'd try to stay up as long as possible. They say that's the worst thing to fall out after.
I once fell out of a tree, and they woke me up every 2 hours when I was a kid. That's the whole thing. There's no naps. I wonder if I can work out. Hey, I need to hear from a doctor, all right? I walked into a camera. It did not give it all. I feel like I'm sort of concussed. Can I work out? Because I'm feeling really fat today, too.
The better question is, why does TV park that camera right in front of the door during commercial breaks? I wonder if they're setting
so
up
that could
like
happen.
Some duck hunt and they want to get this on video. Like, why do they put that right there?
Well, they
there?
Got it. That's a good one. I would say that and I would blame somebody else, but the obvious response would be, hey, idiot, why don't you open up your eyes and not be looking at your phone when you walk in that studio? Head on a swivel. I'm sure that if I were to say to one of the guys back in New York, hey, man, honestly, are you looking to get me? Are you leaving that camera right in the middle of that doorway so something like that would happen? I guarantee it, my man Tom or Sharon or higher up the chain, Tyler Hale, somebody would say, hey, man, head on a swivel. Head on a swivel. They've got video. Do they have video of this? Yeah, let me see this. Play this back on TV. Do you have video of this? Of me smashing into the camera. Let's see it. Oh, that's great. Look at me. They show me coming down, holding my head. Let me see that again. Look at that. That rocks the entire... Oh, that's amazing. That rocks the entire studio. If you're watching on CBS Sports Network, this is the aftermath of me slamming into that camera. It rocks the entire control room. And look at the dope reaching for his head like, oh, damn, that hurt. It's incredible. Seriously, find CBS Sports Network and watch this. And if you're wondering why my eyes are closing, it's because I walked into a camera about 5 minutes ago. So they're running it back right now. We're running it live. It's like a vine. It's me smashing into the camera. Look at the way the studio rocks, the control room. And then it shows me spinning around. That's me doing a 180 right there, holding my head. I think I'll do a 180. Good soundbite. By the way, I really am pretty dizzy right now. 1-800. You know what we need? Where's the blue tent? I need to zip up inside the tent. Little CAT scan. 1-800-636. All right, what month? It's March, right? Vance Mack. My kids' names are Jake and Logan. I'm not even kidding you. I have to think about that. Damn, how about some... somebody get HR on the phone. What do I get for that? It's got to be some workers' comp right there. I mean, I hit that thing hard. Hard. Look to the left side of my forehead. Can you see the welt from where I smashed into that thing? Man, I got so much mileage out of cracking on Hawk for doing it, and then I did it myself. I'm going to be really honest with you. A couple of times I've had a glancing blow. That's not the first time. That's not the first time. Like, I wish I could show you this. If you look at the door to my left, this camera, it's a giant camera, and it's right in the doorway. You can't almost not hit it. So if you're coming in and you're really in this like, hey, I got to see this text. What is this? You can see where that might happen, right?
Right in my face.
Right in the side of my head. All right, so I need to know, all right, I'm actually being serious about this. I'm being real. My fault. I own it. I should not have been looking at my phone. I should have had my head on a swivel. I didn't. I hit this thing hard. It's steel. I walked into it, hit it hard. There is no give. My point is, what do I need? Can I take a nap? Can I work out? I really want to hit the cardio hard today. Can I do that? This guy's a medic. This guy's got some advice for me. Let's go to the phones. And it's not some made-for-radio bullcrap either. That really happened. We have video to prove it. Show the video one more time, New York. The video of me smashing into it. You don't see it. You just say, that's a super slow-mo of me reaching for my head. That's amazing. All right, we go to Tucson. Tommy. Tommy, it's good to have you. How are you?
Jim, how are you, sir?
I was better about 10 minutes ago. What's up? What do you got for me?
Well, all I'd like to say is, okay, so let's talk about this. Double vision any time after you hit your head?
No.
Okay. Shiny stars, seeing a light or anything like that?
No, nothing like that.
Okay. I'm thinking if those two did not occur, you're probably halfway decent at this point. Didn't fall over. Don't have, loss of appetite or anything like that.
No, not as far as I can tell. But definitely no stars, no bright lights. I mean, would that all suggest a concussion?
Definitely the double vision. If you are experiencing any type of double vision, blurriness of any sort, probably maybe a slight one. But okay. Other than that, I think you'd be okay to go out and rip yourself up a little bit today.
My man. All right, Tommy, I appreciate that. I really appreciate you. All right, so Tommy in Tucson is a medic. Instead, if there's no loss of appetite, like I'm not nauseous, I'm a little dizzy. James Kelly's having a great time with this. Why? Because he's got the biggest head on the staff, and it's never happened to him. Kelly's like, dude, what would happen if you couldn't continue? Let me tell you something right now. I would be on this desk in this studio puking all over myself before I abandoned my spot because I walked into a camera. Hey, let me tell you something. You would see something really tragic happen on air, and I don't mean walking into the camera, before I left my post because I walked into a camera. No way is that going on my resume. I'll own that I walked into that camera. Hell, I told you. You wouldn't have even known. I'll own that. But there's no way I'm not going to finish what I started because I walked into the camera. Let's go to Pismo Beach. Arch, good to have you. How are you?
I'm good, Jim. How are you?
Great. Perfect.
I wish you were. I wish you were, too. Jim, but I heard about the head injury. I'm calling you to let you know that it's above the neck injury, Jim, and it's one of the most serious kind you could ever have. So on behalf of your family, your wife, and your kids, it's best for you to get it checked out and get what's called a neuro check, Jim. Make sure everything's working right. And that can be performed generally by a neurologist.
How about if it's just a ding? How about if it's not serious? It's just a ding.
Could develop into things down the way, Jim. You know, you're older. You're not as young as you used to be. A little bit older in life now. So things develop differently when we're older. Okay? And this is one of those things like a head injury. Okay? Now, you asked a question earlier. I heard you on the air. I wonder if I had a concussion. Guess what, Jim? You probably definitely had a concussion.
Why do you say that?
Okay.
Why do you say that, Arch?
You said that you were experiencing like dizziness, your thought processes as far as your kids' names were concerned or something of that nature. You had to think about it. You know what I'm saying? Just little subtle things like that, Jim, could indicate something being wrong.
Okay, now I think that's fair, Arch, but let me ask you that. You're right. I said part of that in jest, part of that was not in jest, but it's been about an hour, and I'm not having any of those issues. Like, I feel much better right now.
Okay, that's a good thing. Okay, but long-term effects, we don't know what happens, Jim. You know, you could bump your head again at home or anyplace else, and then that compacts onto what happened today, okay? So that's why it's best to number one, write the incident down. You're at work, so you got to do an incident report, Jim. You got to fill out an incident report, fill it out, give it to your HR people or whatever. So it's been documented that you got dinged in the head while you're at work.
Okay, let me do this. Arch, thank you very much, wet blanket. Jimmy Dykes. Jimmy, it's good to have you on. How are you?
Jim, I'm good, man, and by the way, that year I was one of People Magazine's most eligible bachelors. It was a bad year. 12 seeds were beating 5 seeds right and left. It was a bad year.
That's great. All right, we'll get into that. That's interesting right there. Now, the book, Jimmy, the book is out right now. Let me start by asking, what's it like for you when you've been working on a project like that and then you just release it to the entire world? What's that feel like?
Gosh, a lot of anxious thoughts. You know, the night before that book came out, hit the shelves on Tuesday, and Monday night I was just, you know, have all the thoughts, Jim, can come at you and just thinking, what if, what that, what this. But we got a real peace about it because I know where my heart was centered when I wrote that book. I know the purpose behind it. I know that I was intentional about finishing it off when I had 60 days to do it, to get it ready for March Madness. I think it's a book, Jim, that is going to resonate with people that love sports, but it's going to be a different book. It's a book that's, as you know, all the guests you've had all over the years, the coaches, when they say the film doesn't lie, and I need to watch the film before I can answer your question, because the truth is there on the film, man. The good, the bad, the what we think we're doing doesn't match up with what the film shows. So that was just laid on my heart to get it in writing and challenge viewers to, or listeners, readers, to go through that book with an intentionality of creating space in their own heart and just pausing, man, and reflecting on your life, where you're going, how that aligns with God's calling on our life for all of us and what that looks like. And so I'm really excited to have this week going on right now, right at the tip of March Madness, and really appreciate you having me on.
No, you got it. Jimmy Dykes, my guest. We'll talk March Madness in 1 minute. The book is called The Film Doesn't Lie, Evaluating Your Life One Play at a Time. Now, Jimmy, when you lay it out like that, you very clearly want the listener or the reader or the viewer to have that kind of reaction. But in writing that book, did it have a similar impact on you? For instance, did the book change you in ways that maybe you didn't expect?
Man, that you are 100% spot on. Because I started writing, Jim, about things that I just struggle with as a guy. Like, I like you, people think, man, that what a cool job. And it is. We're blessed with what we do. But at the end of the day, I'm a dad and a husband, and we got a 16-year-old dog. And I'm just a normal guy. I didn't go to seminary. I'm not a preacher. I just know what's real in my heart and in my life. But then as I start writing that stuff down, I start writing a chapter on forgiveness and making sure that we don't have unforgiveness in our heart. And then I realize as I'm writing, I do have unforgiveness in my heart. I have to dive into that and really dig into how do I get this out of my heart? This is not good for me. This is not God's best for me. So, Jim, that book, I don't know. This is the first book I've ever written. I don't know if I've ever talked to another author. I just know that book challenged me as I wrote it. Like maybe as much as anything I've ever read through or worked through, because it's my own life that I'm evaluating as I'm writing. And I know it challenged my heart. It changed my heart as I wrote it. And I'm really hoping and praying that it'll do the same thing for readers.
I think you're right, Jimmy. I think a lot of people would not take that on because they don't want to do that hard work. They don't want to take that hard look. They don't want to look in the mirror. I know exactly what you're talking about. Now, when you look at the top 10 to 15 teams in college basketball, let me go there for a minute. Can you make an argument, Jimmy, when you look at the landscape, has any team separated itself from the rest, or could you make a pretty good argument that there is so much parity that almost anybody in the top 15 could beat almost anybody else?
I'm with you. No, that's exactly what it is. It's the second scenario. And we had Joe Lenardi. I was doing the Kentucky game Tuesday night, and he came on, and we threw up the ones and the two seeds, according to him. And I think I said during the game, you could flip the two seeds and the one seeds right now, and you wouldn't be that far off. And I was talking with John Calipari Tuesday at his practice. And, Jim, normally right now, the first week of March, whatever we're in, getting ready to head into the bracket a week from Sunday, we would all pretty much agree on the six or eight teams that national champion is going to come from. And we would probably all agree on the 12 to 15 teams that could probably get to the Final Four. Not this year. Like, Calipari and I went through the list, and he and I just on our own came up with 15 to 20 teams we think can win it. Not just get there, that can win it.
Wow.
And probably 30 or 35 teams that can get there. That speaks to the evenness in the game. That speaks to the star power we have outside the power conferences right now. And I think of Gonzaga, who I saw 2 weeks ago. They're the best offensive team in the country, one of the best offensive teams I've seen in a long time. I had them in the Bahamas in November, and they are tremendous offensively. BYU is a tremendous team offensively and really overall. Dayton is the real deal. And these are teams that are not in those big blue blood programs or conferences that are real threats this year. And it just sets up for, I think, just a tremendous NCAA tournament. Those brackets are going to just be busted quickly. But at the end of the day, man, you better have a stud. You better have a guy that refuses to let go of the rope, that can will his team to the next win when it doesn't look like it's going to happen. And when I think of that, I think of teams like Kansas. I think they're going to be picked by most people to win it. But if you said right now, who would you say was going to get there? I would go with Kansas. I'm a big believer in Gonzaga. I love Seton Hall. I had them in November. I know they've been knocked down a little bit, but I like teams that have a limp right now, that things haven't always gone their way. And they got a dude in Miles Powell and Link and a tough, hard-nosed coach. I love those three teams, and I could tell you 10 other teams I think might be in that fourth spot.
It's March. We're breaking it down. Jimmy Dykes breaking it down for us. Jimmy, I got to ask you, and I appreciate that analysis, but you played your college ball at Arkansas under Eddie Sutton. You went on to coach under him as well, and you coached with him in Kentucky. And with all due respect to programs around college basketball, Kentucky is a different animal unto itself. But I want to ask you this. A number of years back, Jimmy, I was in Kentucky because we had some horses there. And Rex Chapman's a buddy of mine. And to walk through and around Lexington with Rex Chapman is something everybody should experience. He was one of your guys there. I love Rex. What was it like coaching Rex at UK?
He is probably my all-time favorite dude to coach. And I was an assistant on that staff, Rex's first 2 years. I see him every time I go to Lexington. I saw him Tuesday night. He still looks like he could get up and down the floor and play. But he is, he's as big of a star as you'll find anywhere walking through their hometown. And he is so kind and with people and patient with people. I love Rex's story. You know, I love my best friends and guys that I just keep in my close inner circle are guys that walk through life with a limp, like it hasn't always gone their way. And they've learned, they've come from it. Their grip on God's hand, their grip on their family has gotten tighter because of it. And I've seen that in Rex. You know, we know his story. It hasn't always gone his way. It's gone his way and 1,000% skyrocketing upwards. And it's also gone the other way on him. But he's learned from it. He's grown from it. And he's just a real guy. As big of a star that he is, man, that guy is, he's real. And I learned from people like that. A lot better open with their struggles, with their thoughts, whatever. And Rex is tremendous. And coaching him back then, Jim, he was a trendsetter in terms of how carefree and loose and confident he was as an offensive player. And Eddie Sutton, as you know, the back of my practice shorts at Arkansas for 4 years had three words on them: dedication, discipline, and defense. And that was not Rex Chapman.
Right.
But that belief of Eddie Sutton, how he played the game, was who he was at Kentucky. But Rex kind of got even Coach Sutton thinking about the importance of offense. He was a phenomenal talent, man, and he was a rock star. So the best story I can tell you to put it in perspective, Rex's freshman year, about 3 months into it, Coach Sutton brings a stack of mail to me and says, one of your duties from now on is to go through Rex Chapman's mail that he's getting every day in our office and go through and give him the stuff that's appropriate and throw away the stuff that's not. Because he was getting offers that were off the charts that an 18-year-old boy didn't need to be getting passed along his way. I remind Rex of that all the time, but that guy's a rock star, man. I love him.
You nailed that, Jimmy. He is a rock star. I mean, we always talk about people who have that it, right? It's almost impossible to explain what it is, but you know it when you see it. Rex has always had it. The book is called The Film Doesn't Lie, Evaluating Your Life One Play at a Time, which is out right now. Jimmy, so you're about the film, and you've coached. I'm really curious, before you go, who are some of your favorite coaches to be with during a film session? Who are the guys you learn from the most?
Yeah, I love Rick Barnes right now at Tennessee. You know, they had a tremendous run last year. But I say that because his team last year, Jim, had the best player-to-player accountability that I've seen in a long, long time. And most of the time, those film sessions are dominated by the head coach making his point, moving on to the next play, or the assistant that has the scout or whatever. And that Tennessee film session last year, those players were asking each other questions. Like Grant Williams would ask Schofield, why did you hedge the screen like that on that play? And that's when real growth and real accountability comes into play when the team, when players are looking at a film like a coach. He's tremendous. John Calipari, I think, is a tremendous communicator with his guys as well in situations like that. All of them at that top level are good. And man, those film rooms, they ain't no jacking around. There's no hoodies up or cell phones out. Those guys are sitting there with both feet on the ground. The chair isn't reclined, and it's a hard session to go through, especially after a loss. But that's when real change, real growth, real progress occurs. And That's kind of the, I tell that story early in my book, The Film Doesn't Lie, to get the reader's minds kind of thinking like that as we start going through the book and you start looking at your life like a game film. But I love when a coach lets me in to watch film, I love that time because I learn a lot about how, I learn a lot about a team, Jim, by how they watch the film, if that makes any sense.
Sure. Jimmy, really quickly, you, before the NBA All-Star break, you got a chance to be on the mic for the Lakers and Nuggets, and you had a chance to see LeBron in person. As somebody who's been around the game a long time, I really appreciated your enthusiasm for that moment. What sticks out to you the most when you watch LeBron play in person?
Just his size. I'd seen him before, actually, at a Kentucky game. He had street clothes on that night. So I walk in the hotel that morning because I had a college game the night before. I get there about 10 a.m. Denver time. He steps off the elevator, and he doesn't have a shirt on. I guess he'd been working out in the weight room or something, walking to the team breakfast. I was just blown away by the size of that guy, the power that he showed that night on the floor. When he and Dwight Howard and Anthony Davis were on the floor together, you ain't getting a rebound, man. That the ball is theirs. And that game, Jeff Van Gundy said it, was probably the best regular season game we've had so far because both teams cared. They were trying. There was playoff implications, home court, all that going on. So that was for four quarters, man, they were going at it. But it just reminded me, when I was a scout in the NBA, I was always made to go to an NBA game about once every 2 weeks just to keep in perspective what that game really looks like and how good you have to be and how big you have to be and how fast you have to be. And it served a reminder to me that man, those guys are – when they want to go, man, they can go. And the size on the floor and the spacing on the floor is completely different than any college game you'll see. And it made me say during college games recently, kids are thinking about coming out early. Tap the brakes. Tap the brakes.
Right.
I've seen what you're supposed to look like.
Right.
And you better stay where you are.
Good night now!